weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the
This is the Quality News Network. At least 35 people were killed and more than 80 wounded when two bombs exploded near crowded marketplaces in Iraq. Also, one U.S. Marine was killed in a separate combat incident. General George Casey has announced a plan to withdraw some 7,000 troops from Iraq by the fall. The New York Times reports that the plan would eventually reduce U.S. forces from 14 brigades to 5 or 6 by the end of 2007. However, President Bush again reiterated that those withdrawals depend on Iraq's ability to take control of its own security. In Washington, White House spokesman Tony Snow defended the legality of tracking financial transactions. He said it led to the apprehension of the mastermind of a bombing in Bali and a man from Brooklyn who donated thousands to a terrorist group. President Bush also rebuked the New York Times and other media outlets for publicly disclosing the program. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is heading to Pakistan to discuss the war on terrorism. She will then head to Moscow, where she will join in a meeting with other foreign ministers in advance of the G8 summit next month. In Tokyo, the U.S. has announced it will deploy interceptor missiles at its military bases in Japan. The move comes amid tensions over the possible test launch of a long-range missile from North Korea. In Israel, the Prime Minister says he will not negotiate with those who abducted an Israeli soldier yesterday. The Palestinian militants have demanded that Israel release all female and underage prisoners from its jails. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has threatened to retaliate with a large-scale offensive. In Washington today, the Supreme Court upheld the death penalty statute in Kansas. Justice Samuel Alito was a tiebreaker in the 5-4 vote. The Supreme Court also overturned Vermont's election finance law, saying it hinders candidates' abilities to raise money. Also in Washington, Senator Arlen Specter says there could be a resolution soon about oversight of the NSA wiretap program. President Bush has continued to resist oversight of the program, in which phone calls and emails are monitored for possible links to terrorists. Senator John Kerry is expected to unveil a national energy plan later today. It calls for reducing imported oil, increasing the use of renewable fuels, and cutting greenhouse gas emissions. In the Washington, D.C. area, some federal buildings have been shut down because of heavy rains that flooded parts of the city. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Federal Reserve is predicting that the U.S. economy will do well this year and next because energy prices will eventually fall. But the Fed also reports the core inflation will remain a concern until then. Billionaire Warren Buffett, the world's second richest person, plans to give away $44 billion. The majority of that will be donated to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Boston Scientific has announced a recall of some of its defibrillator and pacemaker models. The company says an electrical flaw could cause them to fail. Johnson & Johnson is purchasing Pfizer's consumer healthcare division in a $16.6 billion deal. That division includes products such as Listerine, Visine, and Sudafed. Real estate developer Donald Trump has announced plans to build a 70-story luxury apartment tower in Tel Aviv. It will be the largest building in Israel. The Commerce Department says sales of new single-family homes were up 4.6% in May. However, the median price of a home fell to $235,000. Moscow now tops the list of the world's most expensive cities. New York City, Los Angeles, and San Francisco are still the most costliest places to live in the U.S. Light sweet crude settled at $71.80 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 56 points at 11,045. NASDAQ up 12 at 2134. S&P 500 up 6. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. All righty, Monday at last. Missed you guys. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And the long weekend is finally past us, and we can get back to the business of, well, what is it we do here? Well, I think it's safe to say this is an outlet for your outrage, an outlet for your displeasure, an outlet for the pain, anger, that all things Republican and all things Bush engender in us. And, you know, this day is no different. You know, shall we have a fit? Sure, why not? Why do I say that? Well, you know how we've had this discussion lately about how one bad apple doesn't spoil the whole bunch, or doesn't spoil the barrel, or, you know, some Jackson 5 song. Well, I'm beginning to wonder. Now, dirty word alert. There are dirty words coming, but they are not my dirty words. They belong to a Marine corporal in Iraq. This is by an article by Sheldon Rampton, or from an article. Sheldon Rampton wants, if you want to understand why the war is going so badly in Iraq, it may help to examine the recent reaction to, get ready for it, Haji Girl. That's right, Haji Girl. It's a videotaped song by a U.S. Marine corporal by the name of Joshua, oh boy, why couldn't his name be Smith? Marine Corporal Joshua Belile, B-E-L-I-L-E. It's about killing Iraqis. And it's generated some, shall we say, controversy. These are the lyrics. And I don't know, this is Carl Sandburgian blank verse or something. But there's this video, and this Marine is singing this song. Then suddenly, to my surprise, I looked up and I saw her eyes. And I knew it was love at first sight. And she said, Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad Sherpa Sherpa Bakala. Haji girl, I can't understand what you're saying. The singer goes on, this active duty Marine Corporal Joshua Belial, and describes that the girl wanted me to meet her family, but, well, I couldn't figure out how to say no because I don't speak Arabic. So they go to visit her home. Yeah, are you familiar with this already? Am I covering ground you've already been over? Because I just ran across this, and, Agnes can testify. Testify, Agnes. Agnes can testify to the fact that we both just had a fit. So they visit her home, this is from the song, too, side shanty down an old dirt trail. And as soon as they arrive, quoting from the song again, not responsible for the dirty words. This is journalism. This is reportage. This is not me gratuitously, because if I was gonna, I would have done it last week. So here's the verse. Her brother and her father shouted, Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad Sherpa Sherpa Bakala. They pulled out their AKs so I could see. So I grabbed her little sister and pulled her in front of me. As the bullets began to fly, the blood sprayed from between her eyes. Then I laughed maniacally. Then I hid behind the TV, and I locked and loaded my M16, and I blew those little fuckers to eternity. And I said, Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad. Sherpa Sherpa Bakala. They should have known they were fucking with a Marine. Sorry for the words. Those are Marine Corporal Joshua Belial's words. They are not my words. If we were on terrestrial radio, I would not be able to tell you what Marine Corporal Active Duty in Iraq Joshua Belial thinks of the people he is there to... what's he doing? Is he occupying them? Is he fighting them? Is he making war on them? Is he protecting them? Is he policing them? Is he pacifying them? It brings to bear the larger question of what the hell are we doing in Iraq? Not the dirty word. We're all grown up here. Is that as disturbing to you as it is to me? The Council on American-Islamic Relations complained about it. And when they complained about it, the video shows Belial performing the song before a laughing, applauding audience of fellow soldiers at their base in Iraq. I don't know where this goes. I don't know where this ends, people. There's no joke in here. This is not funny. But the soldiers watching it are laughing and applauding in the video. Now, the Pentagon got wind of it, and the brass immediately cranked out a statement saying it was clearly inappropriate and contrary to the high standards expected of all Marines. And then Belial apologized. He said the song was intended as a joke. It's a joke. And that he didn't mean to offend anyone. Now see, let's take a little trip down memory lane to first year law school. Had a professor once. He picked out a student at the beginning of the year, and that student, this torts professor, that student's only job all semester long was to repeat one phrase whenever he pointed at him or her. It was usually a her. I think he was a bit sexist. But when he pointed at her, her job was to say, all liability is based on fault. Because that's the first lesson you learn in torts. And it comes in really handy in parenting. Well, I didn't mean to throw the baseball at my brother's head. I don't care what you meant. I don't care what you intended. I don't care what your intent was. Whether or not you are responsible for your actions is based upon your fault. Is it your fault or is it your brother's fault because he got in the way of the baseball? Is it Corporal Joshua Belisle's fault for glorifying the massacre of Iraqis, including a little girl that he's used as a human shield in the name of God? Or is it the fault of the Iraqis for getting in the way of the fictional bullets? Now, I'm sure that it's possible that someone will say that I... Well, see, clearly Bob don't support the troops. Horse feathers! Horse feathers! Joshua Belisle is not going to be a well man when he comes home. I got a story in the stack here about a woman who served a tour in Iraq. She left. She was a Port Authority or transport cop or something in New York. She served her tour in Iraq. She's living in a homeless shelter now. And, you know, that's... Give it 5 years. Give it 5 years. 5 years, and these stories will be legion. You know, and it's not going to be all cute like Forrest Gump with Lieutenant Dan living over the grate in D.C. But the worst part of this story, well, I don't know, worst part, best part, I mean, can you really apply that kind of language to something like this? As soon as the military disavowed it, there's a hateful, filthy, Republican website called Little Green Footballs. Don't go there. Don't help this bastard out. But let's see. They said there's nothing wrong. Well, let's see. Little Green Footballs called the reports about the video controversy the mainstream media disgrace of the month. Said there was nothing wrong with the song because it doesn't actually describe a soldier killing civilians. The people who kill the little sister in this dark... This is a quote. The people who kill the little sister in this darkly humorous song are not the Marines, but her father and brother as they attempt to perpetrate an ambush. Some of the other people who posted comments to LGF called it a wonderful song. And they attacked the... I'm sorry, you know, we know that right-wing Republicans are filthy-mouthed and filthy-minded, so it's not surprising that they attacked the, quote, nutless Pentagon star-chasing bastards for their own capitulation. Let's see, some other comments from the right-wing... Damn it, we are in, I can't use that word again, a copulating war. Nobody whined about insensitivity to the copulating Japs and Jerrys. I expect more from the Pentagon. The State Department, the CIA are just a bunch of cucumber sandwich eating fools. Huh? The Pentagon used to be about waging war on our enemies. Now they just want to kiss up to them. I'm proud of my fellow Marines in that video. This is exactly the esprit de corps needed, the high morale needed in the middle of a combat zone where those self-same jihadists are trying to kill those Marines every single day. Insensitive? Marines insensitive? God, I hope so. We need them to kick ass and follow orders, but we don't need them to be particularly sensitive. A sensitive Marine Corps will be the death of this country. And finally... One of the things CARE didn't... That's Council on American Islamic Relations. One of the things CARE didn't like was the phrase Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad Sherpa Sherpa Bakala, which makes fun of the Arab language. To hell with care, and to hell with the Arab language, and the Islamist pigs can keep going to hell. Remember the name of the song. The name of the song is Haji Girl. And it is, Haji is the term of art, shall we say, for the American forces presently occupying Iraq. For instance, a small shop operated by Iraqi natives who were born and lived in it's their country, Iraq. That's a Haji Mart. Iraqi soldiers are a Haji patrol. Mr. Rampton writes, the term seems to have come into usage even before the war began in Iraq. Its use was noted following a U.S. military investigation into the 2002 murder of two prisoners at the Bagram collection point in Afghanistan by some of the same soldiers who later oversaw abuses at Abu Ghraib. Quote, we were pretty much told they were nobodies, that they were just enemy combatants, said one of the soldiers at Bagram. I think that giving them the distinction of soldier would have changed our attitudes toward them. A lot of it was based on racism, really. We called them Hajis, and that psychologically was really important. One of those prisoners beaten to death at Bagram was just a taxi driver. Had nothing to do with the war or anything else. He drove his taxi past the American base at the wrong time. The beatings intensified when he screamed out, Allah, 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 and they beat him harder. One witness said, my first reaction was that he was crying out to his God. Everybody heard him cry out, wait for it. How many bad apples do there have to be before the whole damn barrel goes bad? Everybody heard him cry out and thought it was funny. It became kind of a running joke, and people kept showing up to give this detainee a common perineal strike just to hear him scream out, Allah! It went on over a 24-hour period, and I would think it was over 100 perineal strikes. Agnes, dear, you've got some medical training. Would you care to translate perineal strike for the listening audience, please?
I think they know.
Haji girl. Haji girl. Sure. Sure, I could scream. I could raise my voice. I could lose my temper. But I'm so conflicted. I'm so very conflicted. We could take a break now, but, you know, there's only 7 minutes left to the bottom of the hour. I don't see any point in that. I'm sorry to do this. Right out of the box on a Monday evening program, and I got to bring you this. But, and you know, there's other stuff. Yeah. Samuel Alito did what everybody but Robert Byrd expected him to do. In the Kansas death penalty case today. Sure. But there's a line. Where is it? If I can find it. It would be a mistake to imagine that the casual brutality of Haji Girl is coming from people who are simply evil or racist or cruel. The soldiers occupying Iraq are normal men and women who in other circumstances would never commit the abuses that have been documented in Bagram and Abu Ghraib and that are now alleged in Haditha. The situations in which this war has placed them, far from home, surrounded by a foreign language and foreign culture, carrying guns, and fearful for their lives, have brought out behaviors that we would not see otherwise. If American soldiers and Iraqis could meet under different circumstances, things would be different. Here, for example, is how Iraqi blogger Salam Pax described his experience upon visiting the United States and having dinner with an American soldier. You have no idea how strange it feels that we share so much in common. When I told him I would never actually approach an American soldier on the street in Baghdad, he told me that if we were in Baghdad, he would probably be talking to me with his gun pointing at me because he would be scared shitless. there we sat, drinking beers together. Sorry for the bad words, people. I apologize. I don't run out looking for this stuff. But do you see, the one thing I take issue with in that is this line from Mr. Rampton about men and women who in other circumstances would never commit the abuses that have been documented in Bagram and Abu Ghraib. You see, the problem is they would and they did because Charles Grainer at Abu Ghraib and Lindy Anglin, they were prison guards at a maximum security facility in Maryland. And you can bet your last dollar that they did this kind, they did the stuff they did in Abu Ghraib or something similar to it to the prisoners there on an almost daily basis, because that is the prison system that exists in the United States. Please. Rehabilitation. We gave up rehabilitation a long time ago. We've documented. Our friend Rick from several months ago sent a video to us that aired on the BBC about prisons in Florida, California, Arizona, and it looked a lot like the insides of Abu Ghraib. These things happened because of the culture that these people came from, that was added to and built upon by the military. This is our national shame. And you don't get away from it. Well, you know, that Joshua Bilal guy, he's a bad apple. He's one bad guy. He's the only bad guy in Iraq. Well, okay, Charles Grainer, he was the bad... No, Lindy Anglin was the bad apple. No, the guys who did the Haditha murders, they were the bad apple. No, it was that guy with the car toward... And the mama and the daddy on the way... The mama on the way to the hospital to give birth, and they shot her to death. There's the bad apple. No, that's not the bad apple.
Thank you. Would you like to talk about?
What are we doing to the people that we sent to Iraq to kill Iraq? Okay? What are we doing to them? It astonishes me that we use phrases like bad apple. These are systemic cultural problems. Worst things, you know, one of the things that right wingers are so fond of pointing out, and I've heard it a million times if I've heard it once, is this line about, well, there's more murders, and this was back before things started getting really lousy and falling apart. Well, there's more murders in Detroit any old day of the week than there is in Baghdad. Well, if that's the case, then why are we surprised? What's going on, you know? Oh, we've transposed some culture. We've transposed some culture for sure. This isn't... No, look. Any nation that cannot look hard into its darkest depths and try to... If you can't do that and still call yourself an American, there's not much sense in being one, is there? Next week is the 4th of July. I'd say the 230th anniversary of the declaration of our independence from Great Britain would be a lovely time to start contemplating exactly what it means to be American in the first decade of the 21st century. Is Haji Girl what it means to be an American in the first decade of the 21st century? As the bullets began to fly, the blood sprayed from between her eyes, and then I laughed maniacally. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You have the right to remain silent! Let me shut up! Catch me.
shine on the deck in the TV screen. Grind with a new chick, she like cola. Next to the PlayStation controller. If a full trip, then I'm gonna show ya. Send a jacker into. Girl, you ain't on crazy like crazy. Bone trying to make your money, trying to have no babies. Ride clean as well, so I pull in ladies. Laws on patrolling.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq war and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to 4thEstateRadio.com. That's 4thEstateRadio.com.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. Head on radio.
In 1965, Vietnam seemed like just another foreign war, but it wasn't. It was different in many ways, and so were those who did the fighting. In World War II, the average age of the combat soldier was 26. In Vietnam, he was 19.
Six minutes and change before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Monday night. And I'm sorry to start you out on a bummer. I apologize. Let's go straight to the phones. We've got a first-time caller, Mike, calling from Woodstock, New York. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Mike. Hello, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
I stumbled upon your show. I was listening. I listen to Malloy on White Rose Society every day.
I consider Mike a good friend of the program. He's a great guy.
Yeah, it was funny. It was strange. I was listening to the kid. He had kids on. He does kids, you know, under 17. And somebody called in. I don't know who it was, but I think they said it was your kid. And Malloy said, yeah, that's the headonradio.com. So I looked it up, and it's amazing. I've never seen an internet-only radio station like this before.
Well, we are, Mike. We're desperately, not desperately, but we're trying to get the word out that we are in fact America's other liberal network.
Okay.
And just so you'll know, my son is a bit young to do Mike's. He doesn't fall within the age parameters for Mike's youth nights, which I think is a great idea.
I think it was 13 or 14.
Yeah, that was our good friend Bruce Birch's son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm fascinated by the medium. I actually live up in Woodstock, New York, in the Catskills, so I can't really get radio normally. So I listen to everything online.
Well, you're in the Appalachians just like us, and it's tough on a radio signal, isn't it?
Yeah, there's not much of a radio signal. In fact, it's been raining very, very hard here for 4 or 5 days, and the little tiny creek in my backyard has become a raging torrent to the point where the trees are kind of falling in off the banks, and you're hearing crashes and snapping and all this stuff. It's like 20 feet from my door.
Yeah, it's a little scary.
It is, but it's the force of nature, and the weather is totally bizarre these days, and we know why.
Well, it's odd you should mention that, Mike, because I've been completely sort of bummed out all weekend because it's just been gray and miserable, and you know, here we are, it's almost high summer in the hills of West Virginia.
Yeah.
And I'm not an alarmist or anything, but this is just weird.
Yeah, it's kind of all you don't get that much good weather in certain parts of the country, and then it's all you know, everything is kind of topsy turvy. One of the issues the kids kept bringing up was like, are we going to be, you know, around? Are we going to live long enough because of global warming? I think kids are really frightened of that prospect. I'm 46, so I guess when I was growing up, we didn't really. I guess we kind of ducked a lot of issues. You know, we were too young for Vietnam, and we didn't get the nuclear scare really.
No, we did. Well, we didn't get the duck and cover drills that Mike Malloy was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the threat of nuclear war, and you know, my late teen years. I remember when Ronald Reagan did that bit before his radio address, where he said, "Well, I have declared the Soviet Union illegal, and the missiles begin flying in 5 minutes."
That's good. Although there was a little Boris Karloff thrown in there, I think.
Well, there was a little Boris Karloff in Ronald Reagan too, but you know. But yeah, that was terrifying.
I guess I'm calling for a couple of reasons. I was pretty horrified by the whole stuff that you were just talking about with the dehumanization of our enemy, which is age old, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't really have much to add to that. It's just very, very scary and very sad. But I'm more interested in discussing this medium of internet radio, and what, you know, how wide an audience can you develop this way? Are people supporting this? How much listeners could be listening at a time on your bandwidth?
We're set up in such a way, Mike, that as the network grows, we have an infinite capability to serve listeners.
That's amazing.
One of the things that you run up against that we ran up against, you know, most AM radio, which is where you're going to find the majority of talk,
right,
is dominated, as we all know, by right-wing freaks.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so dominated because the ownership is so dominated. Because of the media ownership rules and the conglomerations and the Clear Channels and the Sinclairs and all of those monsters out there.
Right.
So it makes a startup that starts in terrestrial radio nigh unto impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So we went this route. We're set up in such a way. Ben Birch at White Rose maintains all of our streams.
Oh, he does. Okay.
And he is set up in such a way that as listenership grows, we grow with it.
I really admire him. I think I give those guys $2 a month on PayPal. That's how I set it up. So I don't even feel it. It's just $2 a month goes there. It's not, I think I initially gave them a little bit more, but
well, bless your heart. That's what it's going to take to get this started.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far you know, the difference between what we're doing in terrestrial radio is that you can't have accidental listeners, or very unlikely. You know, you're cruising down the road and you're in your car and you punch search on your radio and you just happen to hear something and you stick with it. I call that an accidental listener.
Okay.
You can't have, it's hard to have accidental listeners, given what we're doing here. So, you know, that's a good thing because the people who choose to share their time with us, are very special because they mean to. They're not just, sort of letting it go in one ear and out the other at a toll booth.
Could I make some suggestions?
Do, please.
Do you know anything about SEO?
SEO? No, I'm afraid not, or not in that parlance.
You need to learn. Take some notes. SEO means search engine optimization.
Okay.
And I can send you some. I actually have a book that was sent to me by this woman who kind of researched it. There's a way, like, for example, I just did a search for left-wing radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it would be nice if somebody searched for left-wing radio that you came up in the top 10. You don't.
Yes, it would be.
There's a way to make that happen, and there's a science to it that I'm learning. I have several small businesses. I actually have a record label. I'm putting out a David Rovix release, by the way.
Oh, wow.
And
he's a friend of the network.
Yeah. Rovix is cool. It's coming out September 5th. It's called Halliburton Boardroom Massacre. Oh, my God. Oh, jeez. Could you hear that?
Yeah.
A few trees just went off the bench.
Yeah, I heard that. Man.
It is very frightening. I've been watching it here all day. Sorry.
That's okay.
It's only about 30 feet away. And most of the trees on the other side of the bank have fallen in the last 3 hours. It would be good if you could get up there in the search engines. How often a week are you on?
Five nights a week, and the network produces 40 hours of programming a week.
Wow.
We start at 2 p.m. with Mark Levine,
wow.
Guy James at 3,
whoa.
Bruce Birch at 5, me at 7, and this week during Mike's absence, we're putting up a show of our own with our good friend John Fox, a prelude to his show. He'll be going from 10 to 1 this week.
All right, cool. Well, you got a new fan, but I want you to look into search engine optimization. I have a book that I can send you over the internet that's free.
Oh, wonderful.
And you should get some, like, you know, some teenage geeks, not geeks, but you know what I mean, some computer nerds to help you out.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly will. That's, you know, a lot of this stuff is homegrown, so to speak, Mike, because my lovely wife Agnes produces. I produce some of the programming. I do my own show. The shows that we put up are done largely as a function of love and dedication. That's not to say that we don't all hope to be rich somehow or another someday. But right now this is dues paying. I've talked among the hosts on the show, and I've described it as, right now we're at the Beatles playing in Hamburg phase.
Well, that's a good spot to be in. One last thing before I go, because
yes.
There may be other people calling, and you probably have some other issues to talk about. But I recently converted my BMW diesel to use fryer grease.
Oh, that's great.
And so I'm running now. So just to tell people, you know, it does take a little bit of money, but not as much as you might think. And there are small things we can do to leave less of an imprint, including recycle and trying to figure out some alternative fuels.
Well, let me ask you real quick, what year model is your BMW?
It's a 1986 524 TD turbo diesel.
Okay. See, well, one of the neat things is with the diesels coming out of Germany now, a friend of mine told me that it's largely a function of the fuel pump and the metallics in it. A lot of these things are coming off the line now, biodiesel ready.
Any diesel is biodiesel ready. They're all. Rudolf Diesel invented the engine to be used with peanut oil about 100 years ago. The only thing is, on an older car, you have to eventually replace your fuel lines with synthetic lines. The rubber lines will deteriorate eventually.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of information on this kind of stuff on greasecar.com, biodiesel.org. I'm a member of a local biodiesel co-op where they're producing biodiesel from used fryer fat from a good source, by the way. McDonald's and things doesn't work.
Right.
And any diesel car can use biodiesel. In the winter, you got to go to 50-50 up here in the cold places.
Mm-hmm.
But in warmer places, you don't.
Yeah, I remember when the old Mercedes 300 series had the plug-in on the engine block.
Yeah.
Where you plugged it into the wall to keep it warm in cold weather.
Yeah, the glow plugs. I mean, I've started up in some pretty bitter weather up here in the mountains. It's been okay.
Okay.
If I survive this flood, that's another issue, man. The trees are taking a beating out there. It's pretty sad.
We've seen a lot of the same. We get a lot of clear cutting down here in West Virginia, Mike, and we've seen hellish flooding in the southern part of this state.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 500-year floods.
Oh, my God.
It's because they blow up our mountains to get our coal and... they clear cut the forest before they do that, and there's nowhere for the rain to go, so it just runs straight off.
All right, I have one last oddball comment, then I'm going to
go right ahead.
I think that if all these evil Republicans out there could once ingest some power plants from the rainforest, including ayahuasca or psilocybin, it would take them out of the illusion that they live in. They wouldn't be able to live with the life that they're leading. And I'm an advocate for the use of power plants in a responsible way within a church setting, which the Supreme Court has just ruled, by the way, that there's a church that can use ayahuasca in New Mexico.
Yes.
And these power plants have an incredible effect on people, and you can't kill and you can't cheat and lie after that. And that's my final comment.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. And that's a very well well put forward idea. Of course, the only thing that scares me is half the time I think that Rumsfeld and Cheney and these guys, you know, they got hold, you're in Woodstock, man. They got hold of the brown acid.
Okay, that's one way to look at it.
Mike, so good to hear from you. I hope we'll hear from you again.
Yeah, I'm gonna send you a link. I'm gonna send you some information from your website.
Do please, and if you enjoy what we're doing, tell your friends.
I definitely will.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Bye now. 15 minutes before the hour. We should probably take a break and come back with more of your phone calls. You know how this is. This is conversation radio. And what you bring is as important as anything any host on the horn brings. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Place your hand on your heart. Measure the beats. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's how long it takes to protect your child's life. 5 heartbeats. That's how long it takes to learn about the dangers of pesticides that could be found in your child's classroom. Asthma, lower IQ scores, and cancer have all been linked to prolonged exposure to these toxins. But if you knew there were toxin-free alternatives to pesticides, if you knew you had a voice regarding their use, if you knew you could take action that would make your child's classroom safe today, wouldn't you do something? In a heartbeat. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered. I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
Another day is over, another light is breaking, and I'm tired, but I'm wise about you, my little one. I feel you in the water, I feel you in the corner of my cell. Hey, who else been knows you like I do? As we go again round the stars and their friends loving me.
Now is the time to join together to protect our world, or we could lose all it gives us. To learn how you can help, call for your free World Wildlife Fund Action Kit at 1-800-CALLWWF. Together, we can be a force for nature.
Eight and a half minutes before the hour, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And I wanted to mention something to you, if I may, please. We do have a new friend joining us here on the network, and that is Radio Inside Scoop with Mark Levine. Now, some of you may have listened to Mark live in the past or on his archives there at WhiteRoseSociety.org or at his site, RadioInsideScoop.com. Mark has kindly decided to become a part of the Horn family. So I hope you'll join us, just like you stream this program, 2 to 3 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Tomorrow's program will be a repeat of the... See, he does a TV program in the D.C. area on Monday evening. So Tuesdays will be a repeat of his Monday night show. But Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. So what is that, 11 a.m.? 11 a.m. on the West Coast? I'll leave the math for everybody else, for all the other time zones. We know how I am with math. But we certainly want to welcome Mark Levine aboard. And, of course, he comes in, and that, of course, leads to Guy James, followed by Bruce Birch, followed by me. And tonight, stick around, all foxed up. Love that name. All foxed up with our buddy John Fox, ordinarily our chief engineer, and also darn fine air personality, and great guy all the way around down in Sydney, Australia. He'll be joining us at the close of this program, so be ready for that. Stick around for that. Spread the word for that. It'll be going on all week. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Robert is calling in from Japan. Robert, welcome to the program. Thanks.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, very good. It's a rather gloomy, rainy day, but rainy season's here.
I think it's here, too, Robert, because the same rain that's pouring down on Mike in Woodstock is pouring on us here.
Well, as the temperatures get higher and higher, it'll be raining everywhere, I reckon.
Yeah, I think that's probably a function of some of this, isn't it?
Right. Your interesting discussion at the beginning of the program was what kind of prompted me to call in last week about the army in Europe and here in Japan, because that's, I heard that story on the Guy James show.
Well, sometimes I'm a little slow on the uptake of things, but, it just made my eyeballs roll back in my head when I read about it today.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe not only the people, people writing that song, but also listening to it and cheering it on. So that just got me started with, memory after memory after memory, and then, reading the papers in Japan. So,
well, the article that I read, the thing that it pointed out as a distinction was when you think of the derogatory terms, say gook or jap or Jerry, those are all sort of how can I put it? Those were geared toward a nationality in which with whom we were supposedly at war in one case or another. When you call them Hajis, though, that's a term that derives from people who have made the pilgrimage to Mecca, and it refers not to people who happen to be Iraqis, but to all Muslims, because it is a duty upon all Muslims to, at one point in time or another, if they can afford it, to make the pilgrimage or the Hajj to Mecca.
Right.
And so it's an indication of, I think, the broader religious racist quality of this war.
I think it goes back to the youth of the people. I think in the Vietnam War, that the soldiers were 18 and 19, but in the Korean War, maybe World War II, it was like 22, 25, 26.
Right.
And it was a big issue, unless the soldiers are not professional.
I think you're absolutely right.
Jim was about the Afghan army, and the Afghan army was a very professional World War II, and he's right, because it was just a concept, an army that was not professional. That's why he had all the uses, plus the soldiers in charge.
Robert, do you have a moment or two? We've got to go to our top of the hour, and I don't want to cut you short. Could you reconnect, though? We're breaking up a little bit, okay?
Okay, sure.
All right, I'll catch you on the other side of the news. Thanks.
Okay.
Talk to you soon. Our good friend Robert in Japan, and he always has very trenchant comments, and I hate to get it lost in the translation of a poor telephone line. So we'll come back to Robert coming out of the top of the hour news. It is coming up on time for news from the Quality News Network. They do a pretty good job, don't you think? If you want to reach the show, you know how. Bob@headonradio.com. Bob@headonradio.com. And the phone rings merrily along at 877-443-2366 and 877, the number 4, head on. Jump right in. The conversation's fine. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. At least 35 people were killed in Iraq today in two separate bombings. That came just after several insurgent groups reportedly said they wanted a truce, providing certain demands were met. Also today, one U.S. Marine was killed in a separate combat incident. In Russia, government officials have confirmed that four of its diplomats were executed by a group linked to Al-Qaeda. The insurgents say they killed the men because Moscow did not withdraw from Chechnya and free Muslim prisoners as requested. General George Casey has announced a plan to withdraw some 7,000 U.S. troops from Iraq by the fall. The New York Times reports that the plan would eventually reduce U.S. forces from 14 brigades to 5 or 6 by the end of 2007. But President Bush again said that decision will be, quote, based upon conditions on the ground. White House spokesman Tony Snow today defended the recently revealed program that tracks financial transactions. He said it led to the apprehension of the mastermind of a bombing in Bali and a man from Brooklyn who donated thousands to a terrorist group. In Pakistan, seven soldiers were killed in a suicide bombing just 1 hour after pro-Taliban militants had offered a one-month truce in the area. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is heading to Pakistan to discuss the war on terrorism.
In Israel, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has ordered troops to Gaza City in preparation for a massive offensive. That comes after an Israeli soldier was abducted yesterday by Palestinian militants. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has ordered a massive manhunt for the abducted soldier in an effort to avoid the Israeli assault. In Washington today, the Supreme Court upheld the death penalty statute in Kansas. The Supreme Court also overturned Vermont's election finance law, saying it hinders candidates' abilities to raise money. Senator John Kerry is expected to unveil a national energy plan today. It calls for reducing imported oil, increasing the use of renewable fuels, and cutting greenhouse gas emissions. In California tomorrow, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger will meet with lawmakers in a special session. They'll discuss whether to build two new prisons and other ways to help ease overcrowding. In East Timor, the Prime Minister has announced his resignation, prompting celebrations throughout the capital. The Prime Minister says he feels partially responsible for the recent political crisis that has gripped the nation over the last 2 months. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The Federal Reserve says the U.S. economy should do well this year and in 2007 because energy prices will eventually fall. But the bank also says until then, core inflation will remain a concern. Billionaire Warren Buffett has announced plans to give away the bulk of his fortune, or $44 billion. He plans to direct most of it to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The head of Sirius Satellite Radio has reportedly expressed interest in buying rival XM Satellite Radio, but he says both the price and regulatory issues would be big hurdles to overcome. Boston Scientific is recalling some of its defibrillator and pacemaker models due to an electrical flaw. It's the latest in a series of product problems the company inherited when it bought Guidant last April. Johnson & Johnson is purchasing Pfizer's consumer healthcare division. The deal is valued at $16.6 billion. Real estate developer Donald Trump has announced plans to build a 70-story luxury apartment tower in Tel Aviv. It will be the largest building in Israel. The Commerce Department says sales of new single-family homes were up 4.6% in May. However, the median price of the home fell to $235,000. Light sweet crude settled at $71.80 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 56 points at 11,045. NASDAQ up 12 at 2134. S&P 500 up 6 at 1251. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, it is. It really is. 4 minutes past the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob. You know how it goes. Your calls really are always welcome. 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443. And I'm gonna beat on this like a little tin drum. Stick around after the program. All Foxed Up comes your way with John Fox from Sydney, Australia. Let's see, bombs in Iraq killed 40 more human beings today. What do you say about that? It is what it is. You know, Bob, why won't you give some of the good news from Iraq? And, over the weekend, sometime, fake police in Iraq... stopped a bus coming out of a factory of some sort and just disappeared 80 people? Is this the part where I hear dear leader tell us again that we're turning a corner? Hey. We've turned so many corners, we're running in circles. We've smoothed the corners. But you know that. the other thing to watch out for coming this week to a Senate near you. I can't believe I'm talking about this stuff. But it's an election year, so of course you can count on the Republican Party to once again not overestimate the intelligence of the American electorate, because they've got a flag burning amendment. Oh, this is creepy. Some Republican senators say they've got enough votes to get it passed this time through. As my friends at WD40.com, that's D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D40.com, noted, Wally, our good friend at WD-40, he said, now that they've solved all the other pressing problems in the country, the Senate's about to debate again on a flag desecration amendment. And Wally says, this is sort of a biennial event. Every election year, it rears its ugly and unnecessary head. I don't want to see any flag burning. Unless maybe it's the Confederate flag. Or the swastika, or the fascist flag with the rays extending out from the red ball of fascist Japan. I don't want to see any flags burnt. I don't want to see the American flag burned. But I love my Constitution. But look, I love the Constitution. All of it. But they're gonna debate it, and this being an election year, you know, these are real barometers of political courage when these things come up. For instance, I fully expect my senator, Robert Byrd, to vote in favor of a flag desecration amendment. No doubt. It'll happen as sure as God made little green apples. And it's just a shame. It's pitiful. It's pathetic. It's sad. It's political. Because again, anyone who votes in favor of this flag desecration amendment is saying to the American people, I think you're so stupid that you will vote for me based on this as opposed to something else. You're so stupid that you will let a bunch of right-wing pander freaks accuse me of not being patriotic over this. These are acts of terror. You know, this is political terrorism, of a sort. Better vote for that flag burning amendment, or we'll tell your voters you ain't American. Let's go to the phones. Robert has rejoined us from Japan. Welcome back, Robert. Thank you.
Well, I always enjoy listening to you. The one thing I want to get onto is a little rant, basically, about sports, actually, because it kind of ties in with what you're talking about in terms of the culture.
Okay.
That's the World Cup?
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, Japan, I think last week, lost quite badly to another team. I don't follow sports, actually, that much. But it was kind of interesting because they lost because of the culture and also how they think, and it was interesting because I think of all the countries in the world, I think Japan spends the most money on sports and the most time and energy.
Well, the world gets wrapped up in the World Cup, Robert, and we touched on this a little bit talking with our friend Andy on Friday night from the UK. Mm. This whole thing, the hand-wringing that went on after America lost to Ghana. And you know, there was some racism inherent in that.
Oh yes, exactly. And I think of all the time and the money and the billions of dollars spent on just sports itself, you could probably have had a moon base by now or, I don't know, fed all the hungry in the world and then some.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it's indicia of our upside down society. I've got listeners to this program who are literally rocket scientists.
Right.
And they don't make as much a year as a AAA baseball player.
Exactly.
You know, once you factor in the bonuses and everything.
Right. I mean, the Japanese team lost because in Japanese culture, you do not want to draw attention to yourself and be a superstar because then everybody hates you and they're jealous. And you don't want to make a goal and lose, then everybody hates you. So in the Japan team, they would kick the ball back and forth in front of the goal 1,000 times and nobody wanted to kick it in.
I'm sorry. That's.
But, I mean, it's kind of funny. But all the people, I think, that had practiced the most of all those nations, I think the Japanese had practiced the most. And I learned this when I put, foolishly, my child into elementary softball. And I was thinking, no, that's 2 or 3 hours on Saturday, and that's about it, right, for the baseball season. And that's not the case. It was 13 hours Saturday and 12 hours Sunday.
Gee whiz.
And not just for baseball season. You know how long baseball season is here?
No.
All year, every weekend, every holiday.
Yeah, well, it is far more the national pastime there than it is in the United States anymore.
Yeah, I think it's the Trojan horse that the Americans brought into Japan to make them weak or something. I don't, it boggled my mind. And it's a way of robbing the child of his childhood, because the only thing he's doing for his entire childhood, or these soccer players did, was to play soccer, and that's it. All to the exclusion of everything else.
Well, to a certain extent, Robert, I wonder if that isn't the model that was put forward by the East Bloc. I mean, you remember how they used to dominate the Olympics, and we'd hear about the East German sport camps where children were taken in. You know, Romanian gymnastics.
Right, right, and you know, they would get the gold medals, and we would whine and complain, and so we have to do the same thing too, we get a couple of superstars, one or two, that make it to the Yankees or to the American leagues, and all the people here say, well, we can do that too, and they send their kids off, and they spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to do this, and they never.
Yeah, because the kid's going to be the next Ichiro.
Exactly, right. And it just sickens me to the point that, I mean, because this whole myth of the expertise, the idea of we're going to be number one, number one, number one, number one, no matter what, really robs your child of a life, basically. He doesn't learn, in my case, pottery, going to the beach on Saturday, or swimming, or chess, or just going to the sushi shop that, you know, or of all the things that you really need to have a wholesome person and a wholesome society, that's all sacrificed on the altar of expertise.
Well, yes, it is, and to go back to the Ichiro analogy, I grew up a baseball fan. In particular, I grew up a Cincinnati Reds fan, and if anybody personified really giving it 110%, as the saying goes, every game, you know, it was Pete Rose.
Yeah.
And that is individual determination. I mean, you know, sure, team player, but you know, if the guy drew a base on balls, he sprinted to first base. Ichiro is the same kind of ball player.
Right.
And you don't, that's something in the soul. That's not something necessarily that's taught.
Right, right.
And it's a superimposition, I think, of the idea that you can teach that.
Right, right, right. I mean, some people may have the talent, and that's fine, but the whole idea that we're going to send hundreds of thousands of children to these little league games, and they're all going to practice their entire lives, as these soccer players did. These people did not have lives.
Mm-mm.
No way. I mean, they were there 7 days a week, 8 hours a day, or 16 hours a day, kicking that damn ball around.
Yeah, and
that is meaningless.
Well, you miss a lot of the human experience in that.
Yeah.
But you know, there's got to be some level of balance. The ancient Greeks had it very well, Robert, when they said that all things in moderation. You know, nothing to extremes. You know, you got to have in their case, you had to have time to learn to play the flute or the lyre or whatever, and you had to have time to learn to read and write poetry, and you also had to have time to sharpen your bronze spear and march off and have it the Persians once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and that's the whole thing with Japan is that they have to win, win, win. And but at the same time, the whole culture works against them in winning. And it just got ridiculous with this elementary softball team.
Well, but don't kid yourself for a minute that that's necessarily exclusive to where you are, Robert.
It's a little difficult
to play baseball year around where I am. But the further south you get. You know, my heavens, you know, there might be a December and January break if, but, you know, in places like Texas, Louisiana, Florida, California, Arizona, it's year-round. Whatever sport it is year-round. And parents immerse their children in it. And frankly, I think children should be left to sort of stand idly by the creek and throw rocks once in a while. Because there's something valuable in the hardwiring of the brain in that process as well.
Well, I just realized that these coaches are really the most conservative of people. I mean, they have to win no matter what. So, I mean, for that entire year, I got no pictures of my son playing baseball. That was because he was on the B team, where the B team is the first, second, third graders, and the A team is the fourth and fifth and sixth, and they're the ones that are allowed to play because they're the ones that might bring home the trophy. So I never got any pictures. And, you know, I'm standing there with my camera, and even one of my colleagues is the coach, but they're not connecting the dots because we've got to win, win, win. And it really bothered me because it's the macho culture no matter what. I mean, we've got to win, and who cares if we're going to be happy? So, and we have, I think, maybe every year in Japan, we lose about 3 or 4 kids to heat stroke. I mean, they die.
Yeah.
Or we've had coaches make the team run naked around the track or something.
Oh, golly Moses. This is so 30 years ago in the United States.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell me about it. So it just surprises me that this goes on and on, that we spend so much time and focus just about kicking a ball around, chasing a ball. I had something better as a sport when I was a kid, and that was I had a horse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So a half wild horse. So I spent about a year and a half training it. And if you want to make a little boy a man, give him a half wild horse and have him train it, and then you'll see a real man come out of it. Because catching a ball and throwing a ball ain't going to make a man.
You're giving Agnes goosebumps, Robert. She's grinning from ear to ear.
When you're stepped on, bitten, kicked, and trampled on more than a few times, you have a few chest hairs come out of your chest.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. But these are problems that are symptom, and the more we enter the so-called global culture, Robert, the more that we're going to see this go around the world. The more that this kind of obsessive compulsive stuff is going to be, and it's a shame. When you see it taking over cultures that didn't have it before,
right? Exactly, and it's basically just to rob the children of their childhood and making sure they don't have any happiness whatsoever, because these people never had any happiness. So. But
well, that's pathetic.
Another interesting experience that happened to me very briefly. It's kind of about the globalization.
Mm-hmm.
We had the International Friendship Society among the public school system. And we have it about 4 times a year. So it's the Japanese returnees coming back from their countries and then the international people that live here with their children. We have different activities. And I met an El Salvadorian, first Hispanic that I've probably seen in about 10 years. And he was a pilot for one of the Japanese airlines.
Huh.
Now, I'm thinking that I can understand certain people being imported to Japan to teach, jazz or English or whatever, But airline pilot was something new. And we have a new airport that's based in Kirikyushu. It's an island built out of our burnt ash trash, basically, which was, they constantly burn the trash and they build islands with it. And so he works on one of the cheap, no-frills airlines that's been formed. And he was telling me that half the stuff that they do there is illegal, and that even in El Salvador they would try to hide it up, and but there in Japan they were just unabashed about it. But it was very interesting to see Japan now outsourcing pilots, and then setting up these new American style airplane companies that don't follow any of the rules.
Well, does JAL, if you know, Robert, does JAL abuse its pilots to the same degree that, say, United or Delta or TWA does here?
Well, I don't think it's that bad, but the executives are really nasty. And I've heard stories and stories about JAL just refusing to follow the government regulations and wheels falling off the planes. ANA, which is another national airline, they just had a strike, which, I don't know, you can probably count those, you know, how many strikes we've had in Japan on one hand in a decade. So it's getting bad, but the Japanese have a tendency to just kind of, you know, keep quiet and not raise hell, because that's the whole ethos of this whole society, you know, harmony, harmony.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if I were to fly on a Japanese airline versus American, I would fly on the Japanese, because they're just a bit more meticulous and careful about safety.
Well, it blew my mind a couple of years ago when a friend of mine was who had some contacts with the industry was telling me that an entry-level pilot for Delta actually, in certain circumstances, can wind up making less money per year than a manager at Taco Bell.
Wow.
And, in fact, I believe it was Delta pilots who were compelled to sign an agreement. It was either Delta or U.S. Scare. The pilots were compelled to sign an agreement that they would not sign up for any form of public assistance, including food stamps, because it was bad for the company's image.
Oh, right. Yeah, I read something about that in Michael Moore's book, yeah. What's the point of getting an education? I mean, this is really a war on education, because why send your kid to college? You know, he's just going to end up with no money anyway.
Well, right, and you know, so many of these professions are they're dead ended. They rely on the compassion and the dedication of the student. Social worker, for instance.
Right.
We've got a good friend down in Texas who's written a couple of books, and he's either a master's or a PhD level social worker. And he pointed out to me that, you know, the social worker is the person who most people in crisis are going to meet first.
Right.
And that person is probably, you know, he or she has a caseload that would terrify just about anybody else. And certainly no MD physician would even allow himself to be given a caseload like that. And yet we undervalue these people so that they come out of college with crushing amounts of student debt.
Right.
And they get a job making literally poverty-level wages. And are you know, literally worked right out of the profession.
Well, I mean, I worked as a mental health counselor for about 8 years, and my first one, it was an outdoor treatment center. I worked 93 hours a week, four days on, 24 hours in a row, and this is during Ronald Reagan, so there was no other job.
Yeah,
I didn't have a choice, right? And I made about $990 a month. And my second one was Tallahassee Memorial Hospital, Psych Center,
mm-hmm.
a night shift. And after 5.5 years, I made $7.35. So yeah, and you get burnt out, and it's a nonsense. But the El Salvadorian pilot was telling me that the reason he left El Salvador is that the airline companies, one of them bought all the others up and became a monopoly. And because it was a monopoly, they said, well, you know, you can't go anywhere. So they started abusing all the pilots really bad. And he saw the writing on the wall and started saying, well, I better get the hell out of the country. And that's why he's here in Japan. But, the mergers and all of that, it's the worst thing in the world, I think.
Well, sure it is. I mean, there is a certain degree. All these, you know, Grover Norquist and all these so-called free marketeers, I mean, they're not marketeers, they're privateers.
Privateers, yeah. Right.
You know, they preach, you know, and anybody who's ever even taken a cursory look at Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations would realize that what these economic madmen are preaching is nothing. There's no relation whatsoever to what Adam Smith was talking about. And but again, it's part of the overarching problem that these people are not fact-based. They're not fact-concerned. I mean, this is, you know, it's not just faith-based social services. It's faith-based science. It's faith-based economics. It's faith-based political theory. And it has all the validity of what happens toward the end of the Peter Pan play when Peter comes to the edge of the stage and begs the audience what do you have to do? You got to clap for Tinkerbell or something like that, and that'll make Tinkerbell come back to life. This is the Tinkerbellization of culture.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. It seems just so, I mean, it's a globalized thing. I mean, when you got an El Salvadorian in Japan working because he can't keep a job in his country, that this is, you know, read the writing on the wall here. I mean, same as me as an English teacher. I couldn't make a living in the United States.
Well, and that's so very true. And what you see with, you know, whether it's NAFTA or CAFTA or the United Arab Emirates Free Trade Agreement, this doesn't, it's predicated on this false notion of level playing fields, but the playing fields aren't level, because the real purpose behind this is to drive wages down in the home country by exporting jobs to a second country. Well, you know, the jobs that we started out exporting to Mexico, the Mexicans started making too much money, so they exported the jobs to Vietnam, Sierra Leone,
right.
And it's Bangladesh, and so it's more like a whirly gig or a spinning top theory, where it just goes faster and faster, and the transportation of jobs around the world goes lower and lower. Our friend Greg LeRoy pointed out a couple of weeks ago that, you know, this really is a degrading race to the bottom.
With no end in sight, it looks like.
Right, because the bottom keeps reinventing itself based upon nothing more than the desperation of human beings.
And the more you make it desperate, the more it just goes deeper and deeper. I mean, I wouldn't even want to live in China for all the money in the world, from what I've heard about it.
No, there's a new book out about called Big Coal that points out the price that China is paying for its desperate burning of all the coal reserves it can possibly mine. They lose 10,000 miners a year. There's literally coal piled up on the sidewalks. There's ancient statuary literally melting in the sulfurized air. You know, so, and this is, you know, but this is all a common attitude. You know, I'm sure, even though they call themselves a communist state, I'm sure there's a Chinese equivalent of Grover Norquist somewhere high up in the Comintern or the Politburo or whatever the Chinese equivalent of it is, that's talking about how, you know, well, we can still be good communists, but we've got to get in on the free market. But this free market is anything but free, because it relies at its very base, Robert, on the slavery of the human being.
Exactly. And I just like to know what the answer is. But because I don't see it. I mean, when we start importing people from, you know, all these countries and paying them $300 a week here, which is $300 a month here, it just boggles my mind.
Well, I hate to sound overly old-fashioned or anything, there's parts of this I'm not advocating. But you know, the industrial workers of the world once preached something called one big union, and their goal was to establish a union the world over. And they said, you know, there's working people and there's people who don't work.
Right.
But you can't stop this eternal spin to the bottom until you get some until the workers in these individual states get some ability to demand that they be treated decently.
Well, I think a worldwide minimum wage would help.
Yeah. Well, not so much a minimum wage, but a living wage.
A living wage, right.
You know, I mean, the Senate, the Republican Senate last week, Robert, couldn't bring itself to raise the minimum wage in the United States it's like talking about something that happened a generation ago to your family that's still very shameful today. The Senate couldn't bring itself to raise the minimum wage to $5.65 in the United States of America. And that just makes me, I mean, chills. I mean, it makes me cringe. It makes me want to crawl under a table and just oh, the shame of it. $5.65? That's the minimum wage. And there's no way that you can make an argument that in the United States that's anything approaching a living wage.
When I worked at the Tallahassee Memorial Psych Center, I worked with one psych tech, and he lived on minimum wage, and he had to work two jobs. So he would come in, do his security job from 3 to 11, then come in, clock in at our job, work all night, and then sleep a few hours in the morning. And that was his life, and he's probably still doing that.
Well, the sad thing is there comes a break point to all of this stuff. And the people who pay for it are the people who are on the lowest, you know, lowest end of the economic ladder. The Delta issued a letter last week saying that they were going to cancel the pensions of their pilots.
All right, so they couldn't. So they have to sell bubblegum on the bus, like I saw in Mexico.
Yeah, right, but there was nothing in there in this letter from the CEO of Delta about him even sacrificing a tenth of a percent of his pension.
Right, exactly.
And his pension probably equals that of 10 or 20 or 30 Delta pilots.
Or more, yeah.
It is all of this is grounded in a fundamental disdain for the people who really make stuff go.
Exactly.
You know, whether it's a janitor or a pilot or a coal miner or a retail clerk at Wally World, management doesn't care. And all the happy words in the world aren't going to change it. Robert, thank you so much for your many good thoughts. I always enjoy our phone calls, and I hope to hear from you again soon.
Okay, you take care now.
Have a great morning.
You too.
Bye bye. We are at half past. We're not only half past the hour; we're half past the show. 29 minutes before the hour. This is Head On. And coming back, a couple of stories. Well, there's a laugher or two. And so I was talking to our good friend Mitch via email the other day. He was talking about the right-wing lies about the run-up to the war, and I mentioned to him, curveball. Out of yesterday's Washington Post, there's a new story about curveball. Remember curveball, don't you? Curveball, drinking screw-top wine under the Euphrates Bridge in Baghdad? Yeah, that curveball. So when we come back, we'll talk a little about curveball, if that's okay. Your phone calls are always welcome. 877, the number 4, Head On. 877-443-2366. Email flies right into bob@headonradio.com. This is the Head On Radio Network. And I'm that Bob.
For Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg, we decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid, weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch, Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome back. 23 minutes before the hour, and given the time frame during which this show is on, we'll go to the phones in just a second. But given the time frame during which this show comes on, there's not a lot of breaking news. But I just got this in from our good friend Luke down in Knoxville, Tennessee. It's slugged June 26th, 2006. 7:52 p.m. Eastern time. And let me just say this before I share with you. Dear Jesus, if you're listening, please let this be true. Pretty please. Please, 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 God, let this be true. CBS 4 News, Dateline, West Palm Beach. Sources have confirmed to CBS 4 News that conservative talk show host Rush Limbaugh has been detained at Palm Beach International Airport for the possible, watch the slow curveball hang out over the plate, for the possible possession of illegal prescription drugs Monday evening. Limbaugh was returning on a flight from the Dominican Republic, when officials found the drugs among them. Please, Jesus, don't let this be from The Onion. Don't let somebody be scamming me and Luke. Among them, Viagra. Limbaugh entered a plea deal back in April. Limbaugh had addicted to being admitted to street drugs. No, it says painkillers here. No, they were street drugs. The little old blue-haired ladies in the basement of the Baptist church would be so, so ashamed of me for wishing ill upon somebody. But I'm not wishing ill on somebody. We have talked a million times about the fact that this junkie is not clean. He's still a junkie. Dominican Republic? Look, he went down there to load up on pharmaceuticals that he can't get his grubby little mitts on in the United States. He stuffed them in his golf bag. and speculating, stuffed them in his golf bag, along with about three or four boxes of Cohibas and Romeo y Julietas from the Cuban cigar store. And Viagra. Viagra. Rush? Viagra? I'm going to leave that to your own sad, sad, sad little imaginations. Let's go back, go to the phones. Gene is with us calling from Oregon. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Oh, geez, Bob.
Was that worth the wait?
That thought just, oh, God.
Oh, yeah, I know. Can't stand the visual, can you?
No, I can't really. Well, the reason I called was I'm doing laundry now, and you mentioned something about flag burning.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, as a form of protest, what if we started burning like Halliburton flags or, I don't know, Bechtel, something like that?
Yeah.
ABR?
Sure.
You know, because it doesn't really matter especially if that thing passed. I wonder if they'd bust us for burning like a Bechtel flag or something.
Well, you know, it remains to be seen. For my part, you know, most of the American flags, and you know this, Gene, I know this, we all know this, most of the American flags are made in China.
Mm-hmm.
And they make little American flags on toothpicks for sticking in the tops of cupcakes.
Mm-hmm.
And they make American flag cocktail napkins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hard-headed. If this thing passes, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna burn me a bunch of cocktail napkins and see if I get busted.
That's an idea, but I was just thinking I'm really tempted to do it. 4th of July is coming up, and we can just go ahead and get a corporate flag. There's plenty of corporate flags out there, and you know, find some nice spot in front of view of maybe a corporate headquarter. And burn it.
Don't see why not. Of course, that's the other thing. If they pass this thing, does this mean we're going to have more military adventures the next time somebody in Pakistan burns an American flag?
Yeah, that's true, too.
I mean, whether we like to realize it or not, Gene, American flags are being torched all over the world.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It's their only form of protest. I mean... That used to be people would listen to that when they'd see an American flag torched. Now it's like, or at least, I don't know if I think of it as kind of ho-hum because, you know, the news just doesn't cover that. But this would be something different. So, you know, it was just a suggestion. And, by the way, tell Bruce it hit 101.
101?
Yeah.
In Oregon?
In Hillsboro, yeah. That's just west of Portland.
This is one of those little Dennis Hopper moments, you know, bad things, man.
Oh, yeah. This is the second day we've had this we've had this temperature, and the high is supposed to be 104.
See, right now, I was thinking, Gene, honest to God, I was actually thinking of you earlier today. I looked out the window here in Wild Wonderful, and it was sort of gray and overcast, and it wasn't exactly pouring down. It was just sort of a steady rain. And I thought, you know, this has got to be what it's like in March in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Actually, March is pretty decent, but in April it's usually like that, yeah.
And you know, so we got, you know, and Mike up in Woodstock, New York, we've got what you're supposed to be having, or, you know.
Yeah, well, I guess it's fair. I mean, usually you guys get all the heat during the summer, but, you know, and they say there's no such thing as global warming, but, you know.
but that's the thing, you know. I wonder maybe if we lose the fight just because we're calling it global warming. It's you know, some people say we have to call it climate change. You know, I opt for plainer language, screwing up the planet.
Something. I've actually yesterday it was my term was Earth Fever, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was so hot during the day. It was hot, horrible, and I went out. It was horrible, and I went out at night. And it was like, thank God, it's finally broken.
Well, you know, you may have heard Wayne talking about his son's wedding on Bruce's program.
Mm-hmm.
I was over there for that. It was a lovely time. But the rain threatened all afternoon, and by the end of the day, you could literally, it wasn't like fog. It was like you could just see a haze in the air. It wasn't really raining, but you felt like you could just grab a fistful of wet in the air.
Yeah, it's a moist day, yeah.
Well, there was an article talking about the distinct possibility of Greenland losing its entire ice sheet. That would raise the global sea level, just Greenland, would raise the global sea level by 21 feet.
Well, there was an article I don't think I sent you guys because I saw it and I didn't get back to it, but the Antarctic now, the warm water species are actually moving in. Yeah.
Well, what does 21 feet do in Boston? What does a 21-foot sea level rise do in New York City?
I don't know, but here that'd put me on First and Burnside, I think, in Portland.
Well, you know, the sad thing is, there's every chance in the world we're going to see this.
Yeah.
You know, the good side of that, Rush Limbaugh is going to have to move out of Palm Beach.
That's true. Well, I hope for your sake it's true about Rush.
Oh, you know, it made my night.
Yeah.
It made my night. Gene, always so good to hear from you. And for heaven's sakes, try to stay cool.
I'll try.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
We've got a friend, another friend who, David in Tennessee has talked about it from time to time. He spent some time in Oregon. And he's told me about, you know, what the weather's like out there. And 101 degrees in Oregon ain't right. Now, you're used to it, Luke. 101 in Knoxville,
Well, you know how it is.
That's
now.
April.
You know how it is down here. No telling with us. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Our weather, sometimes I have that feeling that, like I always say, Rod Serling's standing over in the corner going, guess what's next?
Frogs and locusts.
I was a bad, bad boy. I'm sorry. I enjoyed that too much when I sent it to you.
No, just don't tell me you were pulling my leg.
Oberman had it. It was his third story of the night. Starts right at the bottom of the half hour. And I just about, just had to reach down, pull my jaw up off the floor. And I'm just going, please, dear Lord, let this be true.
Viagra? Luke.
Well, see, what I think it is he hid his stuff in the Viagra. That way he figures, well, if the dogs react, I just say, oh, it's just some Viagra I've got in there. You know, yeah.
But it's still illegal Viagra. I mean, there is a cold and poetic justice attached to the idea that Flush's plea deal might be voided.
Well, I heard
by Viagra.
I heard it on Oberman. I went to my computer, put in dog pile, and I searched on it. And I said, you know, news, and that's the only two come up were those. Sent you to the two TV sites. For Channel 4, and there's another one, Channel 13. And that's the only place I found it so far. It ain't even on Oberman's site on MSNBC yet.
Okay, well, some dedicated listener is going to have to take it upon themselves to check out Flemball tomorrow and see if he's a repeat.
Oh, it's one of those things. It's like, yes. I was telling Agnes, I said, you know, my favorite game in the world to play is if and I won the lottery, what would I do?
Yeah.
So, I'll admit it may not last, but at least for this evening, that's what I'm playing. Iffin? Oh, yes.
Well, you know, someone in the chat room just typed that if it turns out to be true, Rush is going to be in big trouble. This is someone who knows some judges from Palm Beach County. And the person said they'll work with you, but only if you work with them. If you don't, they'll shove it up you without blinking.
And like I say, that was his freebie.
Well, you know, This is that moment on. This is one of those Law and Order moments. I've become a Law and Order fan in the afternoon, watching all those reruns. And this is where the prosecutors go in and get all red faced with, you know, hey, he's ours, Your Honor, he's ours.
It's the one where you always my favorite, of course, I'm old school. It's like when you look at Perry Mason and his eyes would shift, and you're like, dead meat.
Oh, but, you know, I wonder about the story, though, because was the Viagra there for comic effect? Or, I mean, because what I want to know about
is... What I mean, I think if he had something, he probably put something in with the Viagra. That way, if anybody caught him, he'd say, oh, it's just some Viagra. You know, it's nothing evil. It's just some Viagra I have for some...
I hope the Florida State Toxicology Lab has enough common sense to bust a few of those capsules and find out. Or pills, I guess. I don't know. I've never even set eyes on a Viagra.
Only thing I know is it's a blue pill. But other than that, that's all I can swear to, Your Honor. But it's like I say, we don't know, but the dog kept on doing handstands. We can't figure it out.
Over here! Oh, very good, Luke.
That was really good.
Oh, I needed a laugh tonight.
Well, it's like I say, I hadn't really planned to call in tonight, but like I say, when I sent that to you, I said, I better call. I said, just so I could say, I swear this is not something I found on The Onion, I swear. You know?
Yeah.
So sometimes I tell you what, with our news anymore, every time I look at it, I say, you just want to look up at the top and say, Onion? Onion? You know?
I know, and I've been burned a couple of times, and, you know, but this has all the ear, I mean, if Olbermann had it, you can guess that it probably...
They probably look through it.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's a team of right-wing lawyers out there, you know, heck, half of them belong to Bill O'Reilly, just waiting for Olbermann to step in the wrong direction.
Well, the one that's got to me today is, as I say, I'm just enjoying all of this, watching, as I call it, watching the Republicans doing the limbo, as I call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like... Well, Democrats are cut and run. General Casey, oh, no! It's like, say, so you see their feet standing there watching their backs just bend totally flat to the ground. Like, no!
Well, what's Limbaugh's lawyer's name? Black.
Black. Oh, Roy Black.
Yeah, Roy Black. You know, as lawyers go... some of my friends tell me, you know, sooner or later, no matter how good you are, you're only as good as your client allows you to be. And if this is true, this is a moment where Roy Black is walking around his palatial estate kicking sculpture.
Well, he's gone over. He's disconnected the phone line. He's getting out of his cell phone. Take the battery out of the damn thing. I am incommunicado.
I spent 3 years of my life working out a deal that they wouldn't have given to God Almighty, and he goes and, oh, Viagra!
It's like, why'd you just crash the plane? Be done with it.
Exactly. Luke, thanks so much, man. Thanks for saving my night. Later. And Ben calling in from Elgin, Illinois. Hey, Ben, welcome.
Hey there. So it was Viagra?
Yes. Well, it said including Viagra.
Oh, including Viagra.
Yeah, well, let me check. I don't want to get anything wrong here. Limbaugh was returning on a flight from the Dominican Republic when officials found the drugs, among them Viagra.
Ah, among them. You know what that means? That means they were able to immediately identify what the drug was. Because Viagra is a distinctive little pill, and lots of guys will recognize it.
Okay.
Okay, because it's blue and it's sort of, you know, rectangular.
Yeah, but the little round pills with the candy coating on the outside don't necessarily say OxyContin.
That's right. And if they were generics for OxyContin, they won't even have, you know, so they might, you know, they might have to, you know, pass a lot of that off to their, pharmaceutical techs to identify.
Well, see, I know I'm engaging in just the purest, ugliest, most rank speculation, Ben, but it's the Dominican Republic angle. The Dominican Republic. And it's Viagra.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's just... He's rich enough, and he's going offshore to get his jollies.
Yeah, and you know, I have heard things about some of the stuff that happens in little Caribbean nations.
Well, you know, I watched The Godfather, so I know about the thing in Havana with the donkey. Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, the age of consent in the United States. It's
yeah.
Not necessarily the age of consent everywhere.
Well, what is it we keep saying with all these hyper self-satisfied, self-righteous right-wing freaks they're going to either be caught with a dead girl or a live boy.
Or both.
That's kind of where I'm going.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's no, you know, the Dominican Republic, short of Haiti, is there any poorer nation in the Caribbean? And, of course, if you're a right-wing uber-capitalist and you believe that anything has its price.
That's right.
There are certain things where you go to the poorest of the poor to offer that price.
That's right. That's right. And you can get, I guarantee you can get whatever it is that you want.
Ben, is this the part where we bring up the fact that you can do a search on the Internet and find stories about Jeff Christie, DJ in Pittsburgh, being busted by the Pittsburgh police in, what was it, Oakland, the Hill District, for...
It was just off the UPitt campus.
Yeah, for pandering?
It was not pandering, he apparently solicited somebody for sex.
Some guy.
And the reason I know about this is there was a fellow who went there at the time who is now a civil servant in Los Angeles. Okay?
Yeah.
And Jeff Christie was at that time on a... You know, was a music jock on a local radio station.
Right. In fact, if you do a Google search for, like, Jeff Christie air check.
Yep.
It's amazing to listen to because it's a 35, 40-year-old tape, and it is the same silly shtick that he's made $25 million on. The talent, you can hear, talent on loan from God in this air check.
Exactly right.
You can hear him refer to his producer as Mr. Snurdly.
Yep, the same shtick he's been following the whole time. And Jeff Christie disappeared overnight from that radio station without a lot of explanation, except the rumor then hit the campus and hit it that very next day that Christie had somehow solicited a big-name jock on campus down on, I forget the name of the street now, that place was known to be where gay guys went to solicit people.
Well, again, it's not about whether he's gay or not. It's about whether he's a hypocrite and a junkie or not.
That's right. He can be as gay as he wants to be. You know, actually, that could put me off thinking about guys forever. but
do the whole Oedipus rip your eyes out of your head kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah, but you know. But, you know, that's not the point. The point is that he has just, you know, he has spared absolutely no vitriol on people like Barney Frank. Okay? Who Mark Levine used to work for.
Yeah.
Okay? He has spared no vitriol whatsoever on that. And, you know, if that is a true thing, if that rumor is true, that he did indeed, you know, get arrested for that back then, and that is the reason he was fired from that radio station, then he's been living a lie for a long, long time.
And that'll make you a hateful person. You know that, Ben?
It'll make you a hateful person. It'll make you do crazy things because, you know, you may wind up flying to third world countries to do things you could probably do at home if you were out.
Yeah. Or to do things in third world countries that if you did them at home would put you in prison for a long, long time.
That's true. But I'm going to be charitable and assume that what he was doing there would have been marginally legal here.
See, your soul is older than mine, Ben. You're better than me. I mean, because I just think he's an evil, hateful, deviant, and I mean deviant, not... You know what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things that nobody would say that... we're talking about things not involving consent, shall we say.
Correct. And I suspect that sort of thing, too, is a possibility. But, you know, charitably, I'll just assume it's not until I hear otherwise.
Well, fair enough. Well, we've got to do the top of the hour news. Thanks for your thoughts, Ben.
You take care, sir.
All right, bye now. On the other side, more of this, or wait a minute. If you're in politics and things don't go your way, do you take personal responsibility? Wait and find out. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. In Iraq, at least 35 people were killed today in two separate bombings. Earlier, several insurgent groups said they wanted a truce as long as certain demands are met. Also today, one U.S. Marine was killed in a separate combat incident. Equipment costs in Iraq and Afghanistan will total more than $17 billion next year. That's according to the Associated Press, which says that includes costs associated with replacing, repairing, and upgrading an aging fleet of Humvees. White House spokesman Tony Snow defended the recently revealed financial tracking program today. He said it led to the apprehension of a man linked to a bombing in Bali and a man from Brooklyn who donated thousands to a terrorist group. President Bush is condemning the media's reporting of the program. Mr. Bush said its revelation last week hinders the U.S.'s ability to win the war on terrorism. The New York Times has responded by saying that some of its government sources have expressed concern over the legality of some U.S. actions. In Washington, President Bush said any reduction of U.S. forces in Iraq will depend on whether Iraqi forces are capable of taking over security. His comments came after General George Casey announced a plan to withdraw some 7,000 troops by the fall. Mr. Bush said that is only one of many plans being discussed. In Gaza City, Israeli troops are prepared to launch a massive offensive. That comes after an Israeli soldier was abducted yesterday by Palestinian militants. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has ordered a manhunt for the abducted soldier. In Washington today, the Supreme Court upheld the death penalty statute in Kansas. The Supreme Court also overturned Vermont's election finance law, saying it hinders candidates' abilities to raise money. The High Court also said today that it will decide whether the Bush administration should regulate carbon dioxide emissions to combat global warming. Massachusetts Attorney General Tom Riley said global warming is a, quote, most significant environmental issue of our generation. In California, two Navy fighter jets crashed in midair over Fort Hunter Liggett in the central part of the state. One pilot was killed while the other ejected and suffered minor injuries. In California tomorrow, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger will meet with lawmakers in a special session. They'll discuss whether to build two new prisons and other ways to help ease overcrowding. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Phelps Dodge has made an offer to purchase two Canadian mining companies, Inco and Falconbridge. If approved, the $40 billion deal will create the world's largest nickel and copper producer. The Federal Reserve says the U.S. economy should do well this year and in 2007 because energy prices will eventually fall. But the bank says until then, core inflation will remain a concern. The head of Sirius Satellite Radio has reportedly expressed interest in buying rival XM Satellite Radio, but he says both the price and regulatory issues will be big hurdles to overcome. Johnson & Johnson is purchasing Pfizer's consumer healthcare division. The deal is valued at $16.6 billion. The Commerce Department says sales of new single-family homes were up 4.6% in May. However, the median price of a home fell to $235,000. A division of General Electric has announced plans to acquire 186 nursing facilities in seven states. The deal is worth $1.4 billion and is expected to close in the third quarter. A new study published by the Annals of Neurology says that cell phone use excites parts of the brain, but whether that is harmful is still up for debate. The industry estimates some 730 million cell phones will be sold this year. Light sweet crude settled at $71.80 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 56 points, NASDAQ up 12, S&P 500 up 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
6 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And just to let you know, you are less, well, you're right at an hour away from getting all foxed up with John Fox after this show goes off the air. Think this is going to be a lot of fun. I hope you'll be on board for it. And, you know, give support and encouragement. Help John along. Because we're really excited to be bringing you this kind of programming. And this amount of programming. And this level of quality of programming. I mean, sure, we make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. But mostly, restaurant quality, gang. Restaurant quality. And I promised you a story about, well, we'll get to it, in, you know, another one of those where the world points at the United States and laughs. And, you know, I'm getting tired of that. I'm getting tired of us being the brunt of jokes and hate. It's embarrassing and it's tragic. But before we do, you know, I wanted to point out something as we move into the flag desecration portion of this year's political program. Point out a couple of things to you. Our friend Sue on Big Coal River sent this one along. An editorial from the Quad City Times. Well, it's by Leonard Pitts, who is out of Miami, but this is from the Quad City Times website. And it says, Feinstein teaches how not to write. Leonard Pitts says, thank you, Dianne Feinstein. Composition teachers all over the country are indebted to the Democratic senator from California for an editorial published Tuesday in USA Today. Instead of tearing their hair out trying to instruct students in the finer points of logic, rhetoric, and critical thinking, teachers will henceforth be able to simply pull out Feinstein's piece and say, don't do this. They will never find a better illustration of a bad argument badly made. Yeah, that's, well, and he points out in here the fact that, you know, this is flag desecration. Check it out. Isn't desecration just freighted with religious overtones? So one more of those 14 defining points of fascism that you can go and find. I think Mike Malloy still has it up at his site. One of those 14 is, you know, the militarism and symbolism and abiding, overarching, almost deification of them. This would be that. But I keep thinking that, you know, like I said with the cocktail napkins or the little flag toothpicks that go in the cupcakes, I keep thinking that if these jackasses are just hell-bent on doing this, and if they do this and they start this ball rolling, I'm going to feel compelled to poke my finger in their eye. Do you remember? I'm such a child of the TV, the golden era of television. Do you remember the episode of the Beverly Hillbillies where Jethro joined the Woodchucks? And I believe Wally Cox was the leader of the Woodchucks. And Jethro comes out in the little, you know, it's a little boy thing. It comes out in the wood. Obviously, it's supposed to be the Boy Scouts, but he comes out in his woodchuck uniform. It's like three sizes too small. Now, flag burning, if you know, you know, there's a handbook put out by the American Legion and everything. Flag burning is completely legal and will be under this constitutional amendment because it is a reverential treatment of the American flag. So you got to turn some of these jerks on their ear. And or poke them in the eye, or, you know, whatever analogy you prefer. Metaphor, I should say. What if you take a big old burly guy like me, and you put him in a little Boy Scout suit? Cub Scout suit. You know, kind of like, what was his name? Angus, what's his name? With AC/DC, with the English schoolboy uniform. Go that route, and, you know, go out and have a flag burning in front of the Capitol. But you're doing it in Boy Scout suit, and you're following the rules by the American Legion. Because at that point in time, you will be being prosecuted for your thoughts. This is the ultimate in thought crime legislation. And I don't care if Dianne Feinstein co-sponsored it, Robert Byrd co-sponsored it, or George Washington got up out of the dirt and co-sponsored it. It is thought crime legislation. Leonard Pitts points out that she writes that Congress has the power to protect the Lincoln Memorial from defilement, so surely it should have similar power to protect the flag, our monument. This is what she calls it. Oh, my God. You know, our monument in cloth. Our friend Robert in Japan is an English teacher. I'm sure he's running around the room screaming right now. Our monument in cloth. Diane, baby, I know you've got a lot of money, but that don't buy brains, does it? You can't have cloth monuments. No cloth monuments. I don't want anybody to burn the flag. But I also don't want to you know, hop on the pony and ride down the trail of thought crimes either. You know, isn't that what we hear from the right wing so much, so very often? You know, we can't have hate crime legislation when weirdos crucify young gay men on barbed wire fences in Laramie, Wyoming. We can't enhance the penalty for that because that would be thought crimes. Can't have no hate crime legislation. You know, if you can't prosecute somebody for hating because that's a thought. But these same monsters, these same freaks, are right there going, we need us a flag desecration amendment, Melva. We really do. Jeepers. No, the embarrassing stuff. Oh, the world giggles. This is out of The Independent from the UK. It's about a man named John Jacob, and no, his last name is not Jingleheimer Schmidt. John Jacob is a businessman, and he wants to win a primary this week in Utah. He's running against another Republican named Chris Cannon. He did an interview with the Salt Lake Tribune, and he's had a bunch of problems with his campaign. He said over the last 8 months, he's had more adversity in his life than he's had in the last 10 years. Deals gone bad, accusations that he... Wait a minute. No, he's... accusations, my left hind foot. Accusations that he illegally employed a Chilean couple. And statements against him by disloyal friends. Huh? Well, they're torturing the English language and yet disloyal friends. Now, so why? So why does the world laugh? Well, he was asked about his campaign, and he said that he was having trouble with his campaign because, and I quote, I should have saved this for Wednesday. Quote, there's another force that wants to keep us from going to Washington, D.C. Cue Dana Carvey. It's the devil.
Satan.
He had decided to run for Congress and planned to dump $1 million into his race, but he can't. Because the devil disrupted his business deals. Well, you know what they say. The devil is in the details. Aww. You like that one, Agnes?
That can't be.
The devil is in the details. But it's indicative of a larger issue. He's a Republican, right? Rush Limbaugh is a Republican. These soulless, sorry seventh sons of syphilitic sea cooks. Are always, constantly, you can't tune them in. O'Reilly, Hannity, Flimball, Savage, the rest of these goons. Without having to hear about how some dude that makes $5.15 an hour has to take personal responsibility. America needs to step away from its slide toward victimhood and start taking personal responsibility. And when they say America, they mean you, not them. This guy's having some tough luck in his campaign, or not if you believe in luck. Or he's just a screw up. He's a political novice. He probably has no business in the campaign. He's just a screw up, and he screws up his campaign, and Satan takes the rap. Yeah, it's like thunderstorms and tornadoes. Oh, act of God. Campaign ain't going right. Act of Satan. What? Why is it we have to be the ones that join the Holy Church, the Holy Church of personal responsibility, and these guys? Oh, devil did it. This devil. Yeah, why can't... It was a hell of a lot funnier when Flip Wilson did it. Ooh, the devil made me do it. But that, you know, that if they go to revoke Flush Flimball's deal, you can bet your last dollar that that'll be part of the defense. Oh, well, Your Honor... he fell off the wagon and did some indiscreet things, and the drugs made him do it. Right there, smack dab in the middle of downtown victimhood, and not able to take responsibility for their own actions. Of course, this is Utah, so this is probably one of those special underwear candidates. There's another force that wants to keep us from going to Washington, D.C. It's the devil. It's the devil. I liked the devil better when he was, like, making beds float and little girls do the thing with the pea soup in movies. Much more creative that way. Of course, if you've ever read Mark Twain's The Damned Human Race, or Mark Twain's Letters from the Earth, or Mark Twain's The Mysterious Stranger. Mainly, though, Letters from the Earth. Mark Twain. I think he was the first person in literature ever to say that the devil was getting a bad rap. Getting blamed for most of the stuff that ought to be sitting on God's doorstep. You know, the devil's not responsible for the tsetse flies that cause elephantiasis or whatever. That's part of creation. Right? You know, that's why you can't have there's a growing trend in the United the political circles, especially, you know, on our side of the debate, that says we have to reach out and engage the faith community. And I'll be okay with that once I get a clear definition of just who that faith community is. Because as God is my witness, I cannot reach out to somebody who believes that dinosaurs were placed in the fossil record by the devil to confound the unbelievers. I can't. I won't. I have too much self-respect to get down and wallow in that embarrassing little pit. So, you know, we need to find that out. Yeah, I saw an excellent story. An individual that our good friend Bruce Birch is familiar with, Reverend Johnson, in North Carolina around Greensboro, leads a coalition of faith communities that recently had a meeting, I think, in Memphis or some such. Those guys I can get on board and have a faith dialogue with. Because they understand that justice and how you treat the poor was the biggest part of anything that was talked about by Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. But on the other hand, Dobson, James Dobson. I hope my party is not out there contemplating an outreach to that. Oh, fresh out of words I can use and without getting another phone call. Well, you know, that was inappropriate. But, no, our party has no business reaching out to the Dobsons and Falwells. And that's like reaching out to an alligator with its mouth open. You know, I'll be damned, a bloody stump. What, like we'd be surprised? So there, a giggle. And so we've had our giggle, and how about a couple of screamers? Oh, you want to take a break, Agnes?
Oh, no.
What?
Okay.
No, I'll, yeah, okay. I mean, 8 minutes to the bottom. I referenced this earlier today, and as much as I would like to just sit and revel in the idea of Flush Flemball sharing some jail time with a person who has really been victimized by the American pharmaceutical industry, I can't get away from stuff like this. From the Associated Press, as a member of the U.S. Army National Guard, Nadine Beckford patrolled New York City train stations after September 11, 2001 with a 9mm pistol. Then she served a treacherous year in Iraq. Now it's 6 months after she's come home. She's living in a homeless shelter. Quote, I'm just an ordinary person who served. I'm not embarrassed about my homelessness because the circumstances that created it were not my fault, said Beckford, 30. She was a military supply specialist at a base in Iraq that was a sitting duck for around-the-clock attacks. The reasons that contribute to the new wave of homelessness are many. Some are unable to cope with life after daily encounters with insurgent attacks and roadside bombs. Some can't navigate government red tape. Others simply don't have enough money to afford a house or apartment. See, we're talking here about a National Guards woman. Miss Beckford. when she went, she left reality. That this is what happens. This is the meaning when the brass says things like, "Our reserves and guard are broken." Because when you take people and use them in this filthy war, and since their guard, they're National Guard, they're not entitled to benefits. They don't get they don't get the same health care structure. There are people in the Guard who have lost homes. Yeah, I know, the law's not supposed to let that happen. Well, it does. They've lost homes because they went to fight in Georgia's little criminal conspiracy against the people of Iraq. They lost homes, and they come back, and, oh, well, congratulations, you're homeless. The report from AP, former Army Private First Class Harold Noel had nowhere to call home after returning from Iraq last year. He slept in his Jeep, parked anywhere in New York, quote, where I wouldn't get a ticket. Then the nightmares would start, he said. He's 26 years old, drove a military fuel truck in Iraq. Then the nightmares would start. Quote, I saw a baby decapitated when it was run over by a truck. I relived that every night. He walks with shrapnel in his knee and has a severe case of post-traumatic stress disorder. And, of course, because government can't, in the Republican world, in Grover Norquist's world, where government exists to be drowned in the bathtub, those are his words, not mine. The government can't be trusted to run its own program, so instead we got a faith-based VA now. And as the report notes, to help people like Noel, the VA gives grants to nonprofit private housing organizations that offer about 8,000 free beds across the country. That's across the United States. The space isn't always enough to accommodate everyone in desperate need of shelter, among the more than 500,000 vets of Iraq and Afghanistan who have been discharged from the military so far. See, when he came back from Iraq, Private Noel couldn't find a job in this robust, bustling Bush economy. And it wasn't just him. He had a wife and kids. And all the shelters for veterans in this faith-based infrastructure were overbooked. Private Noel says, I'm a young black man from the ghetto, but this was culture shock. This is not what I fought for, what I almost died for. This is not what I was supposed to come home to. What he means by that is that he and his family wound up in a shelter in the Bronx, quote, with people who were just out of prison and with roaches. He's trying to train for a job in studio sound production, Private Noel is. I wish we were further down the path and ready for to bring people on board. We'd be one of the first people I called. Studio sound production? We could use one of those. Before she went to war, and this is Nadine Beckford, she put all her belongings in storage, and while in Iraq, she sent most of her National Guard earnings to a New York bank account. When she came back, the Brooklyn storage locker had been emptied, as was her bank account. Her boyfriend wiped her out and disappeared. Her parents are in Jamaica. They can't make ends meet. She's in New York. And I don't mean Jamaica, Queens. This is, the thing is, okay, that's two people. That's not the only two people. This story is repeated time after time, day after day across the United States. Because when the military is treated like a toy by a guy who doesn't give a tinker's damn about the people who make it up, this is what happens. This is absolutely what happens. Let's take a break. If you want to get a last couple of phone calls in this evening, you're more than welcome to. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
The Jordanian-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, created under Bill Clinton, was the first to have labor rights protections included, so the AFL-CIO supported it. But AFL-CIO Policy Director Thea Lee says Jordanian workers are facing major problems with worker rights and working conditions, especially in export factories within areas that are called qualified industrial zones, where many immigrant workers are being abused.
The workers in these zones have been treated horribly. They are almost being treated as slave labor, indentured servants.
The AFL-CIO is filing a trade case in an effort to get enforcement of those labor protections. Lee says the Labor Federation is optimistic about the chances for improvements for Jordanian workers.
We are optimistic right now that these problems can be addressed, and we hope we'll be able to use the mechanism we put in place in the free trade agreement to really ensure that the Jordanian government lives up to its promises.
The AFL-CIO's Solidarity Center has released a report on workers in Jordan. It's the latest in a series of reports on the rights of workers in the global economy.
The Supreme Court this week unanimously came down in favor of a female forklift operator who was punished for filing a sex discrimination complaint against her supervisor. Sheila White was suspended for 37 days without pay and shifted from her duties as a forklift operator to more physical yard work. White, an employee of the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway in Memphis, accused her foreman of sexual harassment. He was suspended, but the railroad charged her with insubordination. The ruling is important for workers because it establishes broader standards for retaliation claims by employees against their employers. Worked for a big box retailer in Chicago, and it could mean bigger wages. The Chicago City Council approved a new ordinance that would make it mandatory for so-called big box stores like Walmart to pay employees a minimum of $10 an hour with $3 an hour in benefits. Proponents of the bill believe it will help lift up working families. Opponents believe the bill will be economically devastating by diverting development to the suburbs. The bill applies to companies with at least $1 billion in annual sales, stores of at least 90,000 square feet, and employees who work at least 10 hours a week.
Here's today's economic report. Last year, the average CEO made more money in a day in the U.S. than the average worker makes in a year. That's according to the Economic Policy Institute. This has not always been the economic norm in America. In 1965, for example, according to EPI, CEOs earned on average 24 times more than workers. It's now 262 times more. Average CEO pays just under $11 million a year in the U.S. at a time when working family wages are stagnating. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
All righty then. 25 minutes. Yeah, 25 minutes before the hour. A little bit of time left in tonight's program. After which comes your way the premiere edition of All Foxed Up with John Fox live from Sydney, Australia. And again, just a reminder of the new look of the Head On Radio Network. It all starts at 2 p.m. Eastern Time now with Radio Inside Scoop with Mark Levine, followed by our good friend Guy James, then Bruce Birch at 5 p.m. Eastern, followed by me at 7, and for the duration of this week, at least, John Fox at 10 p.m. Eastern. See? See how fast we're growing? We're like kudzu. Yeah, because I'm a trained broadcaster. Don't try this at home. There are nights I think I'm going to hang myself on my own tongue. Some stats. Just so you know, people, you know, I talk about the horrors that are being perpetrated. Oh, he's not for the troops. Yeah, see, he doesn't support the troops because he's willing to talk about awful things. Sunshine, I live in reality world. And in reality world, little Iraqi babies get decapitated by army trucks. In reality world, Marine corporals get cheered and laughed at and praised for writing songs about taking little Iraqi girls as human shields and having her parents gun her down trying to kill him. Okay, I live in reality world. Sorry. Do I wish that George Bush had never put any of those people in the position to have to have that befall them or have them turned into that? Wish it. I pray for it. I fantasize about time machines. And why does it have to be this way? I want Kurt Vonnegut's Tralfamadorians to be real so that, you know, make this not be this. But when we take these human beings and send them into utterly untenable, untractable situations and let them come home shattered, ripped off, broken, destroyed, and then turn our backs on them. Is there anybody here that thinks God blesses a nation like that? Because he doesn't. No, some statistics, and I'm sure others could give us an equally candid insight into this. The government figures that there are about 200,000 homeless vets in the United States. Now, you heard the number earlier. We got 8,000 beds for them. 350 nonprofit service organizations are working with Veterans Affairs to provide a network that breaks the veterans' fall, so to speak. Just at your leisure, digest some of these numbers and see if they are as unsettling to you as they are to me. Almost one half of the 2.7 million disabled U.S. veterans. So that's 1.35 million disabled U.S. veterans. They get less. They get $337 or less a month in benefits. Fewer than one tenth. That's what, 270,000. 270,000 out of 2.7 million disabled U.S. veterans are rated 100% disabled. That gets them $2,393 a month tax free. That's the right way. But if you recall some of the stories we've covered in the past, you know that George Bush's VA has been actively engaged in making sure that it sets up situations in which it can swear up and down that problems that returning Iraqi vets have are classified as pre-existing conditions? Sure. Pennywise, pound foolish, swallow a mountain, gag on a gnat, or just meaner than hell. That, it's your call. Now, here's a for instance. If an Iraq war vet is diagnosed as 70% physically disabled and 30% disabled as a result of post-traumatic stress, the total disability does not necessarily add up to 100%. What did I tell you? Pre-existing condition. It could be 80%. That's $1,277 a month. $1,500 for a family of four. Now, what if you're Private Noel walking around with shrapnel in your leg and wrecked by nightmarish visions that haunt you in the bright of day and the dead of night? $1,500. Well, that'll barely pay the rent on an apartment for that would barely house one person, let alone five or four in New York City. I mean, these are the kind of numbers that we used to be accustomed to seeing Sally Struthers mouth off talking about some child, and I'm not denigrating or lessening or attempting to cheapen any of those efforts, save the children, whatever. But that's the way we used to describe poverty in what we used to have the gall to refer to as a third world country. And now, thanks to things like tax cuts for people who eat caviar and sour cream and little tiny thinly chopped onions on toast points out of sterling silver dishes, tax cuts for that crowd, Private Noel is fighting recent prison releases and cockroaches for space for his babies in a shelter in the Bronx. Now, see, this is where I think that maybe there is a possibility to reach across the aisle, because half the people that were conned into believing that they were Bush's kind of people, because, you know, I'd like to live next door to George Bush, because I'd like to sit down and have a beer with him. He's the kind of guy I could drink beer with. This is where we can have the outreach, because as a liberal, as a progressive, I believe in treating human beings like human beings deserve to be treated. You know, it's that whole golden rule thingy. And if you took Private Noel's story and you told it to a veteran from another generation who might have been inclined to might even have voted for George Bush, and you say, is this the way you want it to be? Because this is the way it is in George Bush's America. Well, no. And why'd you do it to him? Now, see, and that's where I'm going to lose him. Because the people who voted for George Bush did it to Private Noel. The people who voted for George Bush voted for an America that has 200,000 homeless veterans and 8,000 beds to put them in. It doesn't have to be this way. A country that believes in, you know, like I said, 4th of July, it's on the way. A country that believes in the spirit and tenets of 1776 does not allow for an America where we have 200,000 homeless veterans and 8,000 beds to put them in. An America that values the sacrifices made at Valley Forge does not allow an America to exist or happen or take place where half of the 2.7 million disabled vets get less than $300 a month. This, it doesn't. It simply doesn't. The signers of the Declaration of Independence said, and therefore we pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. That was theirs, and that was their pledge. And it is a pledge that it's been lived up to by literally millions in this country over the generations. But there is a trade-out. Now, I've talked at great length about what a hero I think Lieutenant Aaron Watata is. I got an email the other day who said he was a sponge. Just sponging off the taxpayer and hoping he didn't have to go to war. And then he didn't like it when he found out he did. I don't think it boils down that simply. But when you take someone, and then, you know, I got a lecture about what the oath means. But when you, well, you know, they volunteered, Bob, damn straight. They did volunteer, and certain promises were made. And Mr. and Mrs. Right-Wing Republican voter, you made that promise. And Mr. and Mrs. Right-Wing Republican voter, you are not living up to that promise. We engage in obligations in exchange for the giving of that oath. Okay? There is a give and take to all of this. And you know what? You and me, and those right-wing voters, well, you and me, we'd like to live up to our obligations. But we've got a Senate. We've got a Senate that wants to worry about flag desecration instead. Oof! Chaps my butt. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Bruce Birch is joining us. Hey, Bruce, welcome aboard.
Hey, Bob. Every time you talk about veterans, it's like you're doing hoodoo for Bruce.
conjuring.
And I can't help, you know, I know that I already had 2 hours today, but I gotta grab a couple minutes more. I really, you know, it's very frustrating. I've worked with veterans for probably 5 years now, and you know, as one of those housing providers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what?
Well, let me ask, are those numbers square?
As far as 8,000 beds?
Yeah.
I would say that's probably close to being a real number, yes.
Is it just me, or should we be screaming?
I think we should be screaming. But I just want to get this out there, is that there's another level. Okay, having the beds available is one thing, but having the right staff in place to deal with the folks who are suffering from PTSD is a whole different level. And what happens is the VA itself does not provide the kind of funding that is necessary to have these people in place to house these veterans, because housing these veterans is not about simply having a bed and dropping somebody into the bed. You know, when you're especially in a community kind of living environment, there's a lot of stuff that goes on, a lot of tertiary issues that you know, a group of veterans living together, you know, have to deal with.
There's got to be some stressors involved.
You know, and there has to be people there who are practicing counselors, et cetera, who can help deal with these folks and work, you know, help them work. Now, I will tell you this. I have seen these kinds of living environments be the most therapeutically amazing places for veterans to be able to work through their issues. I've also seen them be just about the worst freaking nightmare you could imagine, besides having this guy right back into the battlefield. You know, and the bottom line is that it's not the bed and it's not the location, it's the people who are operating the programs.
Right.
And these programs, the greatest majority of them, are now faith-based programs. Often don't think before they wake up on a Sunday morning, and while the preacher is writing his sermon, he's thinking, he has a revelation. We need to have housing for veterans. And they embark upon a lot of these churches, they embark upon these crusades, if you will, for creating housing. And they really do want to help. And I believe their heart is in the right place.
But I'm not worried about their hearts. I'm worried about their brains.
Well, and that's exactly what I was going to say, but their head isn't. And so what you have a lot of times is you have, you know, not only do you have faith-based housing, you have faith-based programming for PTSD survivors, and you can't do that.
Oh, I know the image that I got in my head when you said that. I've got some idea of some Pentecostal preacher coming up and laying hands on a guy who's in the middle of a flashback or something. And
it absolutely has happened. I've watched it.
See.
You know, and
this is where you're supposed to go. No, Bob, it's not like that. You're wrong.
That's absolutely, probably, I would say.
Because it's a demon. It's not the fact that he participated in a horrific war. It's a damn demon, right?
Well, and it's very tough. And I hope that we get the opportunity to talk about this more at length sometime, because I know you're getting up to the end of the show. But I just, you know, I couldn't help it. I mean, I just was listening to you, and, you know, there is such a huge need, but there's so much more of a preparation that needs to go into place before people can just open their housing. I mean,
let me just ask you a question, Bruce. Is this a legitimate function of government? I mean, should the VA be running these things?
Yes.
And should the people who are serving as counselors in these things be fully funded, fully benefited, fully pensioned, civil servants? You know, gee, whatever.
Absolutely. I think, but before, you know, I totally agree to that. I will say that there is absolutely a need for community-based housing that people in the community run. I mean, the best practices of all in dealing with PTSD and other psychological issues is to do the treatment in the community where the person is, rather than to drag them out of their community, put them in some hostel somewhere, then once they're done with their treatment, shoot them back to their same community. They haven't learned any coping skills. They haven't learned the things that they need to learn to be able to function in free society. And so, yes, they end up back homeless again after having spent, who knows, upwards of $10,000 to $20,000 to $30,000 on treatment for one veteran. They're right back again the next month. So, you know, there is something to be said for community-based housing. It just needs to be, in my opinion, needs to be done by competent professionals.
And with a little forethought.
I'm sorry?
With a little forethought.
Right.
You know, because, see, I, you know, you can, you know, whatever some godless Republican out there wants to call me, Bruce, I don't care. You know, big government, tax and spender. You know what? Like I said, we made an obligation with these people.
Yes.
And then the obligation was made in the name of the people of the United States, who are, in fact, embodied in their, not the government, their government. And I, you know, I personally demand a Veterans Administration that is staffed by people who are adequately paid and understand how to deal with issues that are specific to veterans.
Yeah. Well, it's no, you know, and I'm sure you've been to VA hospitals, but it amazes me when I walk into a VA hospital and the security presence is more pronounced than the clinical presence.
More guns than stethoscopes? Is that what you're saying?
You can make your own assumption from that statement. Yeah.
Well, I know that. You know, well, copays. Why is there a copay? Why does a veterans hospital have a copay?
That's a good question. You know, I think it's my opinion that these guys need to, you know, they need to be able to walk in there and get whatever service or treatment they need, and that is what I call supporting the troops.
Yeah.
They should be able to walk in there, get whatever treatment they need, get it in a timely manner, and be able to walk away feeling good about having served their country and feeling good about, their country serving them.
I don't think that's out of line, Bruce.
So?
You know, because I can't justify these Private Noel, what was her name, Beckford?
Mm-hmm.
I can't justify them against America as it is and America as it should be. And you can call us idealists or whatever you want to call us, but America as it should be is the goal. America as it is the problem.
Absolutely. And this housing thing, you know, is just the tip of the iceberg. When you quoted a 200,000 number, I would say that's low. I would say easily that 30 to 40% of the homeless on the streets are veterans.
Gee whiz. You know, So, you know, but again, how do you change it? I mean, against the backdrop of the Grover Norquists of the world saying that government's the problem. You know, government's not the problem when a guy can't see a cab go by with a guy, you know, with brown skin without suddenly having a panic attack. That's not government's problem. That is government's problem. And government is the problem when government doesn't deal with it.
Totally. You know, and the other part of that equation, too, is that, you know, there has to be one of the interviews I did last week at the Take Back America, or a couple weeks ago, was with one of the Iraqi veterans, and, you know, he said, you know, that when they get back from, if they come back for leave, they have to do a psychological, self-reporting psychological instrument that reports whether or not they have PTSD. And if they respond in the positive for some of these things, then the Army will keep them from seeing their family for up to a week while they go put them through a battery of psychological tests. How many of those guys coming back from Iraq do you think are going to want to answer in the positive so that they can't see their family for a week?
Well, exactly, and of course, you know, there's a chain of command in the military, and there is a chain of communication that is outside the scope of that chain of command, and you can bet your last dollar that people coming home know that,
yep,
and they know to keep their mouth shut on that self-reporting instrument.
Yep.
The problem is a year later, if they've got a home to go to, they're waking up in bed at 3 o'clock in the morning screaming.
Yeah, and then self-medicating with alcohol or other drugs, and then that's when they start ending up in the treatment centers and in the homeless shelters, because Lord knows you can't. It's hard to feed an addiction and be able to feed yourself at the same time.
Well, yeah, and beyond that, there's the discrepancy or the dichotomy between the National Guard versus the regular Army.
Yep.
The protocols, the treatment protocols are different. The benefit availabilities are different, right?
Yes.
And, you know, my God, you go away to fight in George's War in the National Guard, and you come back and you know, the house is gone. The job is gone. Everything's gone. And then there's virtually no support beyond that.
Well, you know, I just wish there was a way to convey to all the yellow magnet adorned cars and people who have them about what really supporting the troops is about. It's about putting your money where your mouth is. It's about standing up for what's right, and it's about, you know, it's not about, oh yeah, I support the troops. It's about calling your congressman and saying we need more money into the VA now.
Well, yeah, and you know how it is. I get the right wing press releases.
Sure.
Well, I got three or four of those last week, ballyhooing. We're having a rally to celebrate the troops and their accomplishments and killing Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. You know, to heck with that. Have a rally demand that they're treated like human beings when they come home.
There you go.
Bruce, it's always good to talk to you. I appreciate your perspective on this, and I appreciate you bringing it to us.
No problem, Bob. Great to talk to you, and see you tomorrow.
All right. Well, hey, you're not going to listen to John?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I might even call in tonight and make it a personal record.
Three shows in a day?
We'll see.
All right. We'll talk to you later, brother.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
The show was ably produced tonight by my darling wife, Agnes. John Fox, sitting in the green room now,
yes,
turning it up to 11, is also the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org.